episode 8, the coronavirus episode.
Here's my thing about a LeBron documentary. There's so many twists and turns. There's so many low lows. And like you said, there's so much that we've already seen, like every shot, every HD angle, all these different things of LeBron coming up since high school. It's already been out there. So, of course, there's going to be a documentary at some point, like an official LeBron documentary. My thing is, there's only going to be so much that's new revealing on him. And sure, everybody can reminisce one day and we can say, oh, remember when he had the comeback against the Celtics? He couldn't beat them all those years. There's definitely a story arc there. But again, here's the thing about this Last Dance. The sequencing was so perfect. There was a championship every year of his prime. There's a storyline for each one of those. And they could make the whole 90s this great triumphant journey for him. LeBron, you have 2011, big low spurt for him. 2014, you see it on Twitter every day, him turning around, scared that Kawhi's coming in. Like, and then he goes to the Lakers. The story arc for LeBron, and this is still where he has the biggest issue when it comes to the LeBron-Michael Jordan conversation, is his arc is so up and down, all over the place, the decision. Not to say that in the end, longevity isn't going to prevail, because he's going to have more minutes, more points, more playoff runs than Jordan and all these different things. I mean, what do you go to 8 straight finals?
Yeah.
So that's an achievement of longevity in itself. But Jordan timed his career so perfectly. And that's what we get into in this 98 episode finality here is, should this have been the end? And with the shot, with the Wizard stuff that they just kind of ignored, he had the perfect ending. Like, there's no better way he could have sealed it off. And it really is amazing to think about, especially when we draw parallels to the Patriots. Everything going wrong, the whole building burning down, and their greatness still pulls one out in the last run. It was uncanny. And some of the shots, not only the shot to end the finals, but in game 5, did you see the leaning, like, fadeaway that he tried to hit in Chicago to win that game?
Yeah.
How crazy would that have been? That would have been for the win. And then against Indiana before they went to the game 7, there was a similarly tough shot that he almost hit to end that series. Everything was still on the line for him at the end there. He still had that extra burst. And I'll tell you, 9 and 10, they weren't done when this whole thing got started. They were still grinding away, especially at 10, off-site. Jason Ayer and all the different directors and people that were in charge of this project. And it came up pretty awesome. It was a little fast at the end, I'd say. But overall, I felt like the pacing of the end, the conclusion to some degree was pretty good. I have a gripe that I'll get to in a minute, but what do you think of 9 and 10?
I thought 9 and 10 were great. I thought they were a good way to end really an incredible 5-week stretch. Obviously, coming into quarantine, we weren't expecting to have the Jordan documentary. When we got it, ESPN bumped it up, and that was huge. And honestly, it was something to look forward to every Sunday. It really was. So I thought it was a good cap. I didn't think it was that rushed. I think it was more the fact that we were so used to having these huge gaps in time in the timeline of the film. And then they came together and they met each other. So it was all in one place all at once. But I thought it was a good ending, and I definitely appreciated it for how it capped off the entire series.
And I'll tell you, I don't know how these weeks have felt to you, but with this being that thing to look forward to every week, Monday to Friday and right into Saturday would just fly by. And then all of a sudden I'd be like, it's Sunday again. Like, I'm going to start the countdown again. Really, that's where we are. And now 5 weeks has just gone by like nothing, because you really only had that one thing to look forward to. And, you know, I've been going out doing my workouts every day and grinding away some stuff for CLNS. And this has been awesome for us here at CLNS. Like, we're about to put out this video today of the guests that we've had across the network talking about The Last Dance. And on this show, too, that, like, we kind of got it started right here on Dome Theory with, you know, Mike Gorman coming on, looking back at Jordan's days. Bob Ryan, after the first week, setting off the Jerry Krause fire. Like, he was one of the first people to say that Jerry Krause was done wrong in this, and it happened right here on this show. And then Jeff Goodman got Barkley and Sam Smith, and Liz Robbins came on to talk about the Knicks, and we had some phenomenal guests across the network throughout this whole process, and hopefully we'll have some good ones this week too. This is Dome Theory, formerly known as the Bobcast. I'm Bobby Manning. You can find our streams, our old episodes at realbobmanning.com. Video cutouts at CLNS Media's YouTube and Daily Motion page, so check all that out. We're talking about 9 and 10 here with Taylor McLeod, our producer. And so 9, 10 come and go. We have 5 weeks in the books. And from the very beginning, everybody was talking about Michael Jordan's going to look kind of shaky out of this one. And we get into the fights with Steve Kerr, Will Perdue, some of the trash talk that he has for Larry Bird, Magic Johnson. Do you want to quote the Larry Bird?
What was it? You bitch, fuck you.
So, I mean, that stuff's not going to make him look too bad. In fact, it's done the opposite to some degree. People like that in this country, the fiery competition, the will to win. I think you can look at that and say, would the talent have done that regardless? Because I think you do look at a lot of this and say, did he really get Will Perdue in the fold and Bill Cartwright and these guys? I guess the system did to some degree. Was his fiery demeanor and practice blow-ups and those kind of things conducive to getting those guys into the fold? Maybe. They've won 6 rings regardless. I think it's impossible to say. I do come out of this, though. And, yeah, you can hit on that real quick.
It's just, at the end of the day, I have to keep in mind that Mike did have final say with a lot of stuff. So he came out saying, I think this documentary is going to make me look bad. And I think in his mind, it was probably more of, had this come out in the 90s, then a lot of the stuff probably does make him look bad, you know, in the climate then. But now when it's so, we're so used to knowing everything about everyone, none of it really feels that crazy. But I do have to, I definitely had my Chicago Bulls goggles on every time I watched this, and I still do. Like, I've been itching to watch all 10 episodes back to back since it ended Sunday night. But I, like I said, I'm just keeping in mind that Mike did have a lot of say. So even the stuff that we can take away as negatives, like being essentially a very hostile coworker or a hostile boss, if you want to take it as that, to the extent that we saw it on camera and to the extent that we saw it in the documentary is only to that extent. So it does approach a certain point, because I've got to imagine that there are people out there who really like do hate his guts.
You know, I don't think it's so much people hate him as he's held on to some of these grudges for so long. So I look at this whole series now, the fights and everything else, and I say, what was the thing that made Jordan look bad? And maybe he wouldn't agree with this. And maybe this wasn't what he was referring to, but I come out of this at the very end, and this stuck out to me more than anything. This wasn't a big surprise to only me. Everybody was talking about this. But there wasn't even a note about Jerry Krause's death at the end.
I know.
There wasn't any acknowledgement of that. There wasn't even a note about his lack of a role in this, and they kind of just used old footage and videos and interviews to include him in this. I gotta say,
that's where you feel the Jordan influence.
Yeah, and we'll get into the top 5 to 10 moments of this one. But how about who asked it? The old Sideline reporter that Craig Sager, who passed away within the past few years, was in a press conference with Jerry. He asked this question with all the backstabbing. I don't know what he followed with from there. But it was just audacious the way he put it out there. Craig Sager was pretty funny in this. He only had a few moments, but he made the most of them. Yeah. And so Krause's treatment throughout this gets capped off without even any acknowledgement of that. And that, among other things, 9 and 10, where this list, as he calls it, just grows and grows and grows. Brian Russell, who else did him wrong on the other side? BJ Armstrong was a big deal 2 weeks ago, talking trash to him after the game.
Well, Bradford Smith.
Was he the one who wasn't even real. Yeah. Can you take me through that one real quick?
Yeah, it was like a rookie had a good game against Michael, and MJ said that as they were walking off the court, LeBradford Smith looked over and was like, yo, like, nice game, Mike. And apparently they played the next night or pretty soon after that. And LeBradford Smith had 36 points against the Bulls. And Jordan said, I'm going to score as many as he had in the first half. And then it came out after that, like, LeBradford Smith didn't even say it. Like, Jordan kind of, like, you know what I mean? It made it up for himself as motivation. It's like how Nick Saban always has number one Alabama thinking that people are doubting them. It's that same concept to me.
And Russell was the one who, during Jordan's retirement, showed up at the practice facility when Jordan was there the whole time, which is another funny thing, because if anyone had any doubt Jordan was coming back, his constant presence at the practice facility had to be a sign of that. That's something we didn't get into too much last week. But Russell shows up at the practice facility, apparently, for some sort of – they were probably playing them, and then says, oh, you quit. Wasn't that – that was what happened with him. And then he gets added to the list. And sure enough, they meet in the finals twice to end his career. And he's just taken down these people one by one. And this is how he used people throughout his career to – set off this fire inside him. And that, I have little doubt, played a role in his success and his ability to go out there and just crush the competition, especially when things were hitting him hard, like Pippen's injury against Utah in the 98 finals and the flu game, which you really want to see how this went off the rails as Jordan's narrative in the end. This pizza controversy in Salt Lake City, where the hotel is closed, they're not serving food. All the restaurants around the city are closed, and I guess it's just this one pizza place that they could get an order out at. And the funniest thing is they talk so much about the security in this episode, and they're hyping up like this brick wall that he has around him. But all of a sudden, I guess five people with a poison pizza make it to his door and peek their head around the corner and see MJ there. Get it through the security. There's no Mussolini-style taste tester in there trying to see ahead of time if there was poor. You could use another name there too, but I think Mussolini is the safest for the circumstance. No one is taste testing this ahead of time for Jordan, and all of a sudden, he eats the whole entire pizza, all eight slices. And what was the flu game? What was the hangover game? All these different theories about this game against Utah. This was 97, right?
Yeah.
And now Jordan, looking back on it, is 100% convinced. No doubt in his mind in the way he delivers this. Like, this is just how much this became his show by the end of it. Floating that five people showed up at his door, poisoned pizza, gave him food poisoning, and that was what resulted in him being deathly ill and fighting through it in that game in 97. And at that point, I just threw my hands up and was like, all right, this is what we're doing here.
Yeah, that was honestly, that felt like the only cheesy moment of this whole thing, of all 10 episodes. That felt like the most like corny, cheesy. It was cool to get the explanation of the flu game, but I almost just wish they left it as, you know, he got food poisoning from whatever he ate. It, like the whole pizza story didn't mean anything to me. And it kind of, I don't know. It felt strange. It is what it is. Like, it wasn't a huge negative. It wasn't a huge positive for me. But it does take some of the mystique away from the flu game.
I just don't know how it happened. But anyway, he gets through that. He gets the 97 title. Again, the 98 and win that too. And the question becomes, should they run it back to 99? That's like the big debate that they set up coming out of this. And I think this was actually the coolest moment of the entire series, because it does all get shifted around this narrative of breaking up the team, the last dance, as it's called. And you get a lot of moments in the last episode. They say the last dance in the episode called The Last Dance. That's a big deal. And they get into, could they have run this back for 99? Jerry Reinsdorf comes out and says he was going to bring Phil Jackson back for 99. Jackson wasn't down with it at that point. He didn't want to step over Krause. I don't think he wanted to deal with him for another season after that. Who knows what Krause's response would have been, because he had the whole succession plan lined up. Who knows if that was even on the table? Because I feel like Reinsdorf has been full of crap throughout this whole process. He probably never even offered Jackson that extra year, but who knows? he might have done it knowing that he wasn't going to take it. Of course, Jordan walks away after that. There's a whole conversation about him maybe joining the Knicks the year before this or the year after. I guess that would have been his destination if he did keep playing in some sort of sign-and-trade scenario. But that was truly the end for Jordan. And I brought this up earlier in our conversations about this series of whether he had something left to give. I don't think there's any doubt that he did. But looking at the situation for 99 and where Pippen was at with that back injury, even if he does come back, his best days were clearly behind him. Dennis Rodman was so lost at the end of this, and him being queued up as the third guy in this big three by the end didn't even feel right. Phenomenal rebounding in 98. I think he had 15 a game. At that point, he's down to 4 a game. He's going to do WWE and whatever the hell else he is. And at that point, it's like, all right, Rodman ends up getting cut after this. That's where he was in his career in 1998. So going into 99, they would have needed that big man presence. That hole got filled, and maybe Steve Kerr still gets traded as some sort of cap casualty. Who knows what would have happened for 99. But even if they ran everybody back, certainly they get through the Knicks, because the Knicks just couldn't beat Jordan. But now we get into the finals, and I was shocked to see 1998, the Jazz sweep Kobe's Lakers, 99, the Spurs get through the Lakers and get to their first big finals under Tim Duncan. Man, we missed out on that one, didn't we? Spurs, Bulls, two eras meeting, two guys who are bound to win 5 championships, Jordan going for 7. Duncan, I think this would have been his second in 99, off the top of my head.
No.
And that would have been his first. All right. So
that was also a lockout year too. So I mean, even with the ages of the guys, it's like it was a shortened season.
Yeah, and I heard that benefited the younger guys, believe it or not, because the schedule was so condensed. Like you have 3 games in 5 nights, the way they were trying to pack games together. So who knows how that would have adversely affected Chicago. We never saw Jordan going for that 4th one, because he wins 91, 92, 93. He doesn't attempt 94. And then in 95, obviously, they lose. And then again here, the three-peat, he calls it off for the 4th attempt. Would he have had the energy for a 4th straight playoff run? We haven't seen it. I don't think any team besides the Celtics in the 60s has ever done 4 in a row. You know, the Lakers under Kobe tried to go for the 3rd and 11. It was a disaster. So even the three-peat has been a rarity. I don't think they would have won in 99.
I mean, I'm certainly not going to be the one to say it wouldn't have happened, because, you know, it's Michael Jordan. But I don't know. Like, I don't think the reasoning behind not going for number 4, not going for number 7, it makes sense, right? Like, it does make sense. When you look at it as just, like, the decisions, the facts, like, it does make sense. But I think when you're dealing with Michael Jordan and Michael Jordan's Bulls and Phil and Scotty, especially those three, obviously, I feel like there's a level of respect, a level of you've earned the right to defend what you've done. And I don't think that's crazy. I know sports are a business and it's a lot of what have you done for me lately. But it's not like they were not productive. Like, they were winning championships. And like Michael said, he thinks that everyone would have signed on to go for one more, because it's not like they were young. It's not like they were setting up to go for something crazy. It would have been one more. And, I mean, if you look at how the Bulls have gone about things since, they have been nothing with the exception of a handful of Derrick Rose years. So, obviously, hindsight is 20/20, but it's like, you didn't have the infrastructure in place to build around anything except Michael Jordan. So I don't know why they were so quick to get rid of what was working.
I don't think anyone in their right mind could look back on that and say it was a good move to not go for it in 99.
No, it just doesn't make sense.
It's insane. And it really just came down to what Krause wanted to do after 97. He was going to adapt to 98. And at that point, they stepped so far over the hill that there was no coming back from it in any kind of mindset. You can't get anything for Jordan. They got so little for Pippen and, you know, Kerr at that point that it was just negligible. And maybe they could have got some for Rodman in 97, but at that point, again, they go and cut him. So they don't even have pieces for a rebuild at this point. Like 99, they go in with Ron Harper, and you know, their draft pick is so bad from winning the championship that they can't even supplant that young group with a nice pick. And those drafts, man, they got hammered. Those drafts between 99 and like 02 were some of the worst drafts of all time.
That's the thing too. It's not like their picks were going to be good. Like the rebuild, I don't know. It just doesn't make, it makes sense on paper looking at it when Reinsdorf breaks it down, you know, contracts are up, guys are getting older, yada, yada, yada. That makes sense. But when you add in everything that makes the Bulls at that point, it just, that's where it doesn't make any sense at all to break it up.
That's where Krause's role in this becomes cemented.
Well, Krause thought he was the Bulls, and he wasn't.
Yeah, and that's where this series does find its true shining light in its take that, yes, this was Jordan, this was not Krause. Krause certainly supplanted it with great pieces. I think you see throughout this that Kukoc was a phenomenal move. Pippen undoubtedly was critical in this right up until the very last stand. And man, does he redeem himself with that performance. That was another one of my favorite moments through this, seeing him come back in that last game and hit a little turnaround jumper in the post and just will a couple baskets in. Like, this wasn't even like Larry Bird's last stand where he was just passing. This was Pippen going out there and forcing a couple of buckets in the net. And again,
yeah, playing down low with a hurt back.
Phenomenal performance for his last stand there. And he obviously had so little left after this too that, again, that's another reason I think that 99 would have been a long shot. But no one should argue that they shouldn't have at least tried. Because, again, we've never seen Jordan at that point in his career be stopped. And so much of this was just him through force, sheer will, going out there and taking these games. Other guys would have their moments. Kerr certainly did in the last 2 years there. And Pippen was always right by his side. But so many of these victories were just Jordan's sheer will. And you can't doubt that he would have still had that in 99.
No, you definitely can't doubt that. And speaking of Kerr, I thought it was interesting watching how in times when the Bulls needed a bucket the most, or when times when winning became the most important, and it, legacy is still a part of it, but you get down to the end of the game where it's, all right, our back's against the wall, legacy is legacy, that is what it is, but we need to win this game. It's always interesting watching how Jordan, and you see it a lot with LeBron too, how they're able to use the immense control and influence they have over the game to bring all of the energy of the game towards them and then pass out of it because they know everything's coming to them. It's like a different level. Obviously, everyone drives and kicks. Everyone knows you're going to get a help defender. But the way those guys know with 100% certainty that that extra defender is going to come, that all the attention is going to be on them, and that they can trust a guy like, you know, Kyle Korver missed the shot in game 3 a couple years ago. But you have that kind of player where it's like, yeah, I'm Michael Jordan. Yeah, I'm LeBron. I can do it myself. I have all these, you know, amazing highlight game winners, clutch plays. But at the end of the day, I'm still a basketball player, and what works is good basketball. I always think it's very interesting to see how the star players in Michael Jordan, in this sense, in episodes 9 and 10 with the past occur, how he understood that all the attention and all the legacy and all the energy of that game was going to come to him regardless. And that's when he can just turn back into a normal basketball player and make the right play because they'll never expect it.
When Evan Turner compared his pass to, I think it was Jay Crowder in a regular season game, to the Jordan the Kerr pass.
I agree. Anything those guys from that era of Celtics said, I'll agree with forever. Those were my heroes.
I don't think it was this shot, but one of the bigger ones against Indiana in the conference finals, the way he goes up on that shot and the angle they get it at as it goes from – they're looking at it from the baseline, and the way he pulls up and
the fall away
and
the elbow.
Oh, it was awesome.
It was amazing, right? Yeah. I know exactly which one you're talking about. He like kind of comes off of something, hits a little fall away on the elbow, and it's right when they start talking about how he took the game over. Yeah, that was crazy.
Kerr comes out of this looking really good. Again, amazing the style through which that he played during that era. just unafraid to just jack up shots when that wasn't a thing people did. And when Jordan did it in the Portland series, it became this legendary moment. And that's just normal basketball now. And what he would go on to do with the Warriors, I think the parallels there are just awesome when you consider his playing style in that era versus what the Warriors would do during the 2010s. So I come out of this and ultimately think that Jordan, if this looks bad for him at all, it's the grudges. How it seems like coming out of this series, when we've seen what the legends are saying, they still don't seem to have much of a relationship with him. Like Charles Barkley, he was on Goodman's show and Goodman asked him about The Last Dance and Jordan, and he just kind of laughed. They were talking about the Gary Payton clip on the iPad. Yeah. When Jordan was just laughing it off, and Barkley just like, of course he did, with a little eye roll. And so who knows what kind of relationship Payton and Jordan have at this point. We know that there's beef between Isaiah and Jordan. And again, you really don't see Jordan mingling with the other stars of the game. He hasn't been back in Chicago at all. Sam Smith has said that. Like, I don't think Smith has seen him once in Chicago.
No, since Jordan only mingles with the stars that he feels are, like, worthy of him. That's why it's Bird, it's Magic, it's Kobe. You don't even see him with LeBron, ever. Like, LeBron was on...
There's a cold war there, isn't there?
I know. Like, I don't think there really is, because LeBron has always been so openly a fan, right? He's always been like, no, that was my guy. Like, you know what I mean?
Did you see LeBron post that he would have played with Jordan?
Yeah, absolutely. I watched the after show for, I think, Uninterrupted as an after show for The Last Dance, and LeBron did last night's episode or 2 nights ago. And he was saying, he's like, yeah, like, Michael Jordan's my favorite player. Like, he was my favorite. He was the best superhero to me. Like, I would have played under his style because it's Michael Jordan. I mean, LeBron was acknowledging that his leadership style is different and everything, but, like, you only really ever hear Jordan giving props to guys that he really, really thinks are worthy to be mentioned with him, and that's why you only hear him ever, like, give praise to the legends and then, like, Team Jordan guys. Because, I mean, I remember a couple years ago when they asked him, like, what players from the league he would want to play one-on-one. He threw out Kobe and LeBron immediately. And then he threw in Melo, who, you know, elite scorer, but also a Team Jordan guy. And then he keeps building out Team Jordan a little bit more. Team Jordan kids a little bit more relatable every year. You had Russ. You had Blake. But now you're adding in guys like Tatum. You know what I mean? Luka. So I think he's going to end up, you know, he always is going to be with those legends. But I think the way now, especially with this documentary humanizing him to us, a younger generation, he's just going to – Team Jordan is going to, like, blow up more. You know, you have a guy like Zion, too, add in with those guys. And I think that's really where it's going to be. But, like, you're right about the grudges. It's interesting that he doesn't have these relationships with – any of his peers from the era. I mean, even in the documentary, it's like the only team he really showed any respect for were the Pacers, the late 90s Pacers, and then he kind of threw in that Detroit gave them a little bit of trouble in the beginning of his career, but that was it.
And you know, there was apprehension for Miller too. Like, we saw the fight there. Well, we saw the way they were talking about each other.
Reggie Miller stinks.
He would be better served, I think, in some way to uplift his era a little bit. Now, let me ask you this question. I got into this on Twitter a little bit yesterday. Who would have gained the most from that era? And, of course, you can throw Isaiah out of this because he did beat him. But who would have gained the most out of the people that were seemingly stopped by Jordan's greatness and unable to reach that championship level? Who would have gained the most by beating him?
Chuck. Charles Barkley.
There's no doubt about it at all. And is there anybody more underrated in NBA history?
You have guys that no one really knows about. So, like, a Moses Malone. Like, people don't. Because he's, like, right the fringe 80. Like, you know what I mean? He's a little bit older. But in terms of, like, big names that are still around the game, I don't think anyone – no. I think Charles Barkley is one of, if not the most underrated player from, like, that era who's still around that people completely clown when he was, like,
because he's in the same breath as Duncan's in an echelon of his own. when it comes to that position.
I hate talking about Tim Duncan. I'm sorry.
How come?
It's so boring.
All right. Well, we're just putting him in a category.
And no, I understand. And Tim Duncan's one of the all-time greats. It's just so hard for me to – and this is me just being like a very like – I don't know what it is. But playing alongside – like with KG playing at the same time, it's just like I know what the more fun version of this is like.
So we put KG there. Barkley's running the conversation with them.
Absolutely, and he's smaller than them. And he's a lot smaller than them.
Yeah, like he was 5. It was so great listening to him on Goodman's show. He was 5'9", 5'10", I think, and gets to like 6'5", or whatever he ended up being. And one of the greatest rebounders of all time at that size. Seeing him in 93, like this was one of my favorite moments of this. He was lethal. Like, Jordan and the Bulls didn't have an answer for him, and he was pushing them right into those overtimes at the end of that series. You watch all 6 of those finals, and of course, Utah really had them on the brink. But Phoenix was the only one out of all of them that I was watching, and I was like, this team has it. Like, they're right there. They have what it takes to beat this team, because Barkley was every bit counter to Jordan and what he was doing on the other side. And if he could have just sealed that off, man, the legacy push that he would have had would have just been unbelievable. So for him and Jordan to just have no mutual respect, and I'm sure Charles does more than Jordan does, and it just doesn't seem to be a lot of talking and uplifting there, those guys from that era. And all of a sudden you have a situation where I'm looking at the guys who LeBron went against. And LeBron does a great job to lift those guys up, and I think we have a better
– That's why LeBron's never going to get held in the same regard as Michael Jordan.
Well, I think what it benefits him is he's able to look at his era and say there was just a massive competition here. Really great competitors like Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Pierce, Garnett, and Allen. Like, think of the standard we hold them in because they were able to block him for all that time. And there's a high level of respect there by LeBron that he shows those guys. Jordan, it's just like we look back at his competition. There really weren't any compelling figures on the other side of that Portland series. There was beef between him and Drexler, so he wasn't going to do a whole lot of uplifting Drexler in retrospect. And the one people I think who get credit, like you said, is maybe the Pacers to some degree, but the Bad Boy Pistons. I think he spoke pretty highly of what they were able to do against him. There was obviously beef there, but he uplifted them in a way that I think spoke to the competition that he had to go through. And that helped his legacy there. I think LeBron gets helped immensely by uplifting what was around him and what he had to go through.
Absolutely. And the fact that – what I meant when I said LeBron will never be held in the same regard as Mike because of that, the fact that LeBron is, like, liked around the league, like, guys really like LeBron, like, he's known as, like, a personable guy. You know what I mean? Like, that's the reason he'll never be – held in the same like magic and mystique as Michael Jordan, because he is like he's clearly the best player in the world, has been for a long time, but he's still like a man of the people. Ultimately, the way he interacts with everybody, and that can bring us into the conversation about why his documentary will be so different. Michael Jordan, the thing that this documentary made me realize more than anything, the reason he is so known as the greatest of all time is the entire aura around him, the entire environment he built. Like, you go win a huge game and then pull off in the Porsche with the license plate that says Air on it. I love LeBron, Bob. He's my favorite athlete, has been since I started watching sports. When he pulled out in that Porsche with the Air license plate, I was like, I get it. I get it 100% why people will never, ever turn on thinking that he's the greatest of all time, because he had everything. That's not to say that LeBron doesn't. That's not to say other guys haven't built their own version of that. But the way he put everything together, whether like on court, the work ethic, everything just works so perfectly. And it's like there is magic to it. And I think 9 and 10 – and this is getting off track, but I think these last two episodes were the most to me that were like, wow, like as a 21-year-old, as a kid who was born 5 days after he won his last title, this is where it's like, now I get it. Like, that's Michael Jordan. Because, like, I've always seen all the highlight films. I've seen all the championship videos. I've seen all the interviews. I've seen all the Ahmad Rashad talking about it. But, like, to see the little stuff like that, like, and really when he pulled out in that Porsche for the license plate, I was like, damn. Like, I understand it all now. I get it.
That's what this did better than anything else, that imagery, the shots that they had. Going into the locker room, following him in there for that shot of him with the basketball on the ground. They were just
see stuff like that to me. It's like you've seen the still photos of that, so you can imagine the moment. It's like the little stuff, like it's like the other little stuff to me that like is so crazy. Like him even on the bus, like with the headphones on.
That was great.
Like so in his own world because he's Michael Jordan and it's gonna work out because he knows he's going to work harder than anyone out there. He knows it's just, I don't know how to describe it, but
there was one great Jordan meme really going into this. And now we have about 15.
Dude,
the iPad stuff, Jason Air with the iPad handoff. And this isn't anything new. This is part of his whole documentary style. But, man, how much did that add to this? The simplest little thing to where he was able to respond throughout the series to his adversaries, that was so played up. Like I said, if anyone takes anything from this, it's him and his combats with his combatants. And he was able to respond to all the critics, to anyone who said anything about him on the iPad, the facial expressions, all the way right up to the final one of Jerry Reinsdorf, where he's reacting to why they didn't come back to 99. And he makes about 5-6 faces as that video is playing that basically just make the entire series. It's the subtleties, like you said, that really made this. And again, that those two things where I look at the amount of interplay that he had and rivalries that he had with people around him to where he was able to respond off the iPad like that. And like you said, all those old footage, all of the mystique, all of the things that we just look at with him and say, that's what made him MJ. This came together in a way, especially with quarantine now, where like it's just uncanny. I don't think it's replicable.
That's a crazy thing too, Bob. Like, so I was thinking about it as I was watching it, and I have a couple questions I want to ask you, and we can start them here, but the fact that this is now linked to coronavirus and quarantine builds the legend even more. Like, this is obviously, you know, hyperbole, exaggeration, but like in the biggest moment of any of our lives, the thing that we looked forward to most was more than 2-decade-old footage of Michael Jordan games. Like, it builds, that's going to build into this legacy even more, that it was like, yeah, like all the NBA players, everyone in the whole world, it feels like, everyone on Twitter, everyone, you know, on the internet, everyone I know, everyone's watching this at the same time. It's not like, oh, yeah, you get an episode in between finals games where you kind of might have a lot more LeBron Jordan stuff, especially if the Lakers were in the finals this year, where if this was debuting, you know, at 2 episodes between finals games, like it was supposed to, I'm pretty sure, then you'd have a lot more debate between legacy. But because it came out when we're all in this situation, all of our focus, we were all able to sit down for 2 hours every week and really, really focus in on this and soak it all in together. And it builds this legacy even more. It's crazy how – it's just crazy. And I think a big part of why this did what it did for people our age especially is that Jordan really, really participated. Like, when he's in those interviews, he's actually answering questions. He's actually talking. He's not holding things back. He's not saying break after everything. We got that one segment, that one powerful segment where he does say break. But
man, and that was another. Oh, that's incredible. That sequence was unbelievable.
Incredible. And because stuff like that, it breaks that wall. Like, there's – even through all of this, there's still a wall between all of us. But for those 2 minutes, we got to hear Michael Jordan say, look, I know I'm hard on everyone. I know. Like, I get it. I get why people don't like this. I get everything about it. I get why it's wrong as a human being to be like this sometimes. You don't have to do it, but it's what works. It's what works for me. It's what accomplished all of this. That's how I did it. I just wanted these people to come along with me to experience this stuff with me. You know what I mean? Like those 2 minutes, there's a similar 2 minutes in the Dennis Rodman 30 for 30 where he just is talking and he says, like, I knew all these people were taking advantage of me. As I was this rock star, I knew it was wrong. I knew it wasn't what it looked like. And to have those little moments from not just Rodman, his documentary, but especially from Jordan, it makes him a real person. Like, we know everyone, we all know a person who, you know, they're super competitive, they hold grudges, whatever, whatever, whatever. So there's some comedy in that. But for those 2 minutes, we got to look inside the real, real him. The acknowledgement that his way wasn't perfect, but it was his way and it worked. But you didn't have to come with him. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. It's like all of this builds a legacy that was already so, so huge for him.
Yeah. What he added still, and I love what you said about the social media there, because who was tweeting right along with this? Who was part of the conversation? Who was consuming this? But LeBron James.
It made these pros like kids again. And like, we're out here on the same internet as these guys, like sitting on the couch, the same, like they're at home with their families. Like, I just watched Dwayne Wade and Gabby Union on Desus and Mero, and they're talking about how they take notes during it because they don't want to talk during it, because they don't want to, like, interrupt
Wade,
it.
Yeah, Wade especially was really in awe of this.
Chris yeah, Paul. You know what I mean? So, like, the so way what, during all of this that it made, like, everyone kind of, not a kid, but, like, an at-home spectator, it's like, damn, I don't know if there's any other athlete, and obviously this is because of quarantine, but I don't know if any other athlete could have our attention like this.
There's a reason it happened, because he retires in 98. It's so funny that the Wizards stuff is left completely out of this. Not even an epilogue about that. Unabashedly Jordan's writing of this. Like, once 9 and 10 came, this really just turned into the Jordan show at a high, high level, where he was just completely grabbing the narrative and rolling with it.
What's crazy, it was that's how it actually was. Like, that's what I've been trying to, like, wrap my mind around, is, like, even when things were, like, super, super bad, they just won a championship. Like, that's how it ended.
Yeah.
Like, so we all, like, oh, it's, like, oh, it ended on a bad note, and the bad note was their sixth championship in 8 years.
This is why this can't be replicated. Maybe if I'm giving anyone a chance for this, it will possibly be Tom Brady, just because I know how the way the Patriots film functions, the NFL does this.
6 and 10.
The NFL does this in a very different way, though. The way they do it, the style of the NFL films, you know, it's a much different kind of – it's far more game-driven than it is people-driven, which is the nature of the sport, too. Like, the NFL, you look at the teams, you look at the action, you look at that kind of stuff more than the individuals throughout it. So that makes it a little more difficult on Brady, too. But he's someone who transcended that in a way that, you know, especially on a team like the Patriots that was so team-oriented, he already transcended that in a pretty special way, all things considered. But what works against anybody trying to get this, and it really is funny to look at people in the days after and say, oh, who would you like to see the next Last Dance be about? Like, this isn't happening for anybody else. And there's so many different reasons for it. The footage, first and foremost, like, that lost footage is just an uncanny storyline among all the other pretty amazing things about Jordan, as we talked about. But also, you know, one of my favorite writers, Ta-Nehisi Coates, did a great thing about Kanye a couple of years ago when he was losing his mind. And he was talking about Kanye as the last in the line of these figures that you heard about. Social media was still kind of in its early days when Kanye was getting going, so there was still this allure around him to where if you heard him, the college dropout and those early things he was doing, there was kind of this mystique, this legend to him where you didn't really know who Kanye was, but you heard the music, you heard the stories about him. And this was something that applied for Michael Jackson, you know, Nick Joseph talked about Elvis, and when he brought up Elvis, I was just like, oh. So it applies to Michael Jordan especially. And around the world, people heard about Jordan. They had the shoes, they had the highlight tapes, they had the stories that they could build off, and you could even see him on TV from time to time if there was a big event and he was on the finals or whatever else you have. There wasn't highlight tapes online. There wasn't this constant access to his life like we've had with LeBron and others. He had a mystique. He had an inaccessibility to him, to where when you get this massive look into his life and these years of him, even though we knew a lot of this stuff, it became like a look into like heaven. Thing that you don't even imagine.
1,000%.
Like, that's, you get the look into this area, this person, this thing that just kind of lives as something in your head. Like, there's so much left to the imagination with him that there isn't today for anybody else. And I think that's the biggest reason why you can't replicate this for someone else, because the cameras, like, LeBron's in the barbershop, LeBron's doing this, LeBron's doing that. Every single day since he's been a kid, we've had a look into LeBron's everyday life. So, like, what more could we see there that we haven't already? We'll love to look back on it and reminisce on it, but, you know, there's not going to be anything jarring, new, or invigorating about it.
Yeah, and I think that I'm hoping that we're over-exaggerating that. Like, I'm hoping that there is a lot of stuff that we still don't see and that we'll get to experience for the first time. Like, little things like halftime of that last game where T-Lew apparently, like, really, really went at Bron hard in the locker room. Stuff like that. All right, hang on, sorry. My cat is on the mic purring. No, sorry.
I love that cat. It didn't even look real at first.
Yeah.
This is incredible.
Yeah, we might even be able to keep this in. This is...
Is this the life of Taylor now?
This is my life. Sorry, Bob.
This is dog behavior from a cat.
No, I know. He's young and he really likes to... All right. I don't know. My final thoughts, like, on all of this are that there's only a couple other situations that I really could see a documentary like this happening and having at least a similar effect, you know, on a smaller scale, because not everyone is going to be invested like they are with someone like Mike. The early Kobe Shaq Lakers, I'm very interested to see what kind of
that
stuff
one's
we can get out of there.
And you hate to put it in these terms, but when someone dies early like Kobe did, that mystique gets inserted into their life. There's no way around it. And
yeah,
so
but he already had it, though.
He did to some degree.
Like, it didn't – to me, like, when he passed, it didn't grow at all for me, because Kobe was already, like, cemented. What I've really also learned from this Jordan doc is that Michael, LeBron, and Kobe are the three that are separate from everyone else in terms of, like
– the difference with Kobe, the controversy.
The controversy, and he had Shaq. People are always like, what's the knock against Kobe in – off the court, obviously, we have 2003. But his biggest knock is that he had the most dominant player in the NBA on his team for his first three championships. And that doesn't discount Kobe Bryant at all, because he was still putting up incredible numbers alongside Shaq. But, like, you had the two best players in the league on the team at the same time.
Yeah, and that isn't the biggest thing that breaks the mystique, though, to me. And, you know, he ran the Jordan playbook. And I think he came as close as anyone possibly could to building that mystique in his life, especially doing it in Los Angeles. Any documentary, and again, there'll be good documentaries. We're talking about Last Dance, which is a very specific kind of documentary. There's been better ESPN documentaries. There has been better documentaries. You watched OJ. Like, that was probably better than The Last Dance, right?
OJ's like one of the best documentaries ever.
It's different. So we're just talking about, can the style be replicated? There's things in Kobe's life that are going to prevent that from being what this was. Just a pure, unadulterated celebration and, you know, with a few stupid controversies thrown in, like the gambling and the pizza. So that's what prevents what is going to come from Kobe, because Showtime's working on it off Jeff Perlman's book that's coming in September. So we're going to get that within the next year or so. But it's not going to be anywhere the same kind of experience that this is going to be. So let's wrap this up. 10 moments from this. You brought up some already. I brought up some already. The red car, anything with the, you said it was a Porsche.
Anything, yeah, no, that red Porsche car is my number one moment of this whole documentary.
What, you know what I thought pushed this to the next level? And I'd really love to talk to the director of this on here. But the amount of people that they got, and not just Obama, not just, you know, Clinton and that kind of thing, Carmen Electra, like just the weird people that ended up in this. To get his security guard, Gus's wife, on there and add that whole segment to the last episode was pretty awesome. And his cancer diagnosis and him fighting through it. Just like the other scene that was really endearing to a lot of people, the other security guard, John, that died as well within the last year of cancer. Him doing the coin flipping game with Jordan there, easily another top 10 moment in this one. I love the locker room scene of the All-Star game where Jordan's talking about Kobe. We got into that already about his comments about Kobe, and then the way he just puts Larry and Magic down in the locker room, like they're just two Joe Schmoes. That whole sequence was really awesome. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what else I really loved out of this one. Believe it or not, once they got to the Rodman part two WWE, I was just like, yeah.
The Porsche with the air license plate was incredible to me. The last 2 minutes, episode 7, where he's describing his mentality, were very powerful. The part where he was, the young guy on the Bulls was like, yo, Mike, like, stop telling the camera this. Like, stop, like, no. Like, that was hilarious to me. Stuff like that was funny. The stuff where he just was like a normal person. Him shooting quarters with security was awesome. Stuff like that. Like you mentioned, like, those are my favorite moments.
Phil Jackson's highlight tape.
Yeah, you love Phil Jackson's highlight tape. That was pretty good.
With Cream on there, I figured out the song. The song's called Cream. Because, you know, there's normally going to be a little bit of hip-hop or, you know, that kind of stuff over a highlight tape. But no, Phil Jackson gets Cream. You know, throwing it back to, I Ain't No Joke, when he has his breakout against the Celtics. And he's just, like, ripping them to shreds. That was – the young Jordan segment of this was freaking awesome. Because we had mature Jordan who was doing it in a very controlled way. Young Jordan who wasn't necessarily winning but was scoring 50, 60 points all the time. And just ripping people to shreds athletically, like, looking like he was playing a different sport was – that's a joy to watch, too. Also underrated was Jackson talking about the, Native American – it was a weird moment, but the Native American backwards walking man and the way him and Rodman meshed, I think that put Rodman's role in all of this and why Jordan wasn't killing him in good perspective, because especially when he went and did the WWE thing, I was expecting Jordan to just light him up. And again, he's there in the pajamas at practice and, you know, Mike lets it slide. There was a thinking behind that, apparently.
I mean, when you're getting 20 boards in the finals, I think you could probably do whatever you in your like mid 30s and you're all like grown. It's not like everyone's like an adult at that point. It's like, I don't know, as long as you do the job. I think the last scene of The Last Dance should have been Rodman drinking a Miller Lite and then pulling off in the Harley.
At least it got in there, period. Another one, last episode, Jackson's final dig at Krause at the championship ceremony on the stage. He had to do it, he did it, and
yeah.
Again, people are going to be mad that 99 didn't happen. It was a good year to, I think, give this one last shot. I don't think they would have won the championship, so maybe they set this off on the right path. But again, this series creating that sense of wonder again is pretty powerful, because people were willing to get wrapped up in any conversation whatsoever around this. But that extra chance for 7, I think, is a legitimate conversation that got sparked up again.
Yeah, for sure.
So there we go. The Last Dance is done. If you're sick of these episodes, we're going to move on to new things, bring back our music segment every week. Maybe some interviews dribbling out of this one. I get some people that I want to talk to about this, especially the director there, if we can get him. So stay tuned for some interviews coming out of this. Taylor, thanks for all the production work you've done the last 5 weeks. Check out our YouTube channel, of course, CLNS Media, where we have a lot of great Last Dance stuff if you're looking for some conversations with legends about this. And you can subscribe to us, as I said before, at realbobmanning.com. You can follow the show at Dome Theory. We'll see you next week.